Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Peter Whittle. Now, but before I introduce this week's guest, just a note about a couple of locals events coming up this coming week on Wednesday the 17th of April. There are two happening. One is in Carlisle and the other is in Beaconsfield, very far apart, but they are united in both being New Culture Forum locals events, totally free. If you are in either of those areas and you'd like to come along, these events are proving so popular, then we would love to see you. Best thing to do to get details is to go to this email, write to this email, which is locals@newcultureforum.org.uk. It'll also be down here in the blurb underneath this video. Anyway, so that's Wednesday, 17th of April, this coming Wednesday. Both of them are in the evening. Okay, so maybe see you there. Now, my guest this week, well, you already know her really quite well because she's always on, I'm very pleased to say, our show Newspeak, so she was on yesterday with us. Amy Gallagher, though, is also standing as the SDP candidate for the London mayoralty, and she's here talking to me. Now, Amy, does this include the London Assembly as well?
Yes, yeah.
So you were on this list thing, are
yeah,
you, number
yeah.
one, are you on
Yeah,
that?
Number one. We've we've entered 11 candidates, I think, but I'm the top one, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
You know, I remember I've spoken to Lawrence when he said he was going to stand, and also we've had Reform people on. But tell me, why did you want to stand for the mayoralty?
Well, I mean, I was always drawn to the SDP because their policies matched mostly with my own than any other party. And essentially, well, they approached me and asked me if I would do it. And I initially just thought that's completely insane and crazy. I'd never imagined that I could be involved in politics in that way. But then I just went away and I thought about it. And I thought about kind of London and what it means to me. And it seemed, you know, I feel like a very unlikely kind of politician. But I felt like I wanted to do something. I feel like, obviously, with my legal case, you know, it's a very stressful, difficult thing to go through. And I've always said, you know, it shouldn't be down to ordinary people to make changes via lawfare. It should be politicians and political parties that stand up to this thing. So I felt that it was for me to do something in that area as well.
You mentioned that your legal case, of course, that's how we first met,
yes,
actually.
Yes, yeah, over a year
you
ago.
You were on this programme. Mm-hmm. Is it 2 years ago now or a year ago?
A year and a bit.
Can you just briefly tell us, of course, you are in the middle of an action with the NHS, are you not?
Yeah, with the Tavistock NHS Trust. So essentially, yeah, I was training to be a psychotherapist in my kind of final year and I was kind of bullied and hounded out for disagreeing with critical race theory, essentially. So ideas of white privilege, ideas of all white people are racist. And as soon as I sort of spoke out about that, I was a sort of essentially a marked woman, and I went through over a year of sort of bullying and being told that I was inappropriate, being told that I was unsafe and so on. And eventually I was stopped from finishing my clinical work with patients. So yeah, I'm kind of almost, it's difficult to know with a legal case. It's a bit like how long is a piece of string, but we're getting there and it's still ongoing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you did a great program for us all about what's happened with therapy, the heresies, which is, well, actually, when I last looked, it's on 200,000 views.
Yeah, I'm amazed. I'm very proud of it, actually. Yeah. And thank you to NCF for allowing
me. Excellent, excellent documentary.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the harsh realities of electoral politics. You were thinking, you said a lot about London. Mm-hmm. You are a Londoner, are you?
Yes, yeah.
What is it? I mean, tell us a bit about, you know, where you grew up?
I've always grown. So I've grown up always in kind of South London area. So I think I was born in New Cross, and I've always lived sort of in sort of Catford, Lewisham area. I lived in Bromley, and now I live in Alpington. It's just slightly outside of in Bromley area. But all my family have lived in London. So my grandparents have lived in London. My dad was a London taxi driver, so London's very much part of our kind of part of my identity, really. I've never lived anywhere else. And my dad was always very proud to be a London taxi driver. He always spoke very highly of London, you know, driving tourists around and how great our city is. And yeah, I mean, I've seen it change, as most of us have, as you say in your documentary, that in the last, I guess, what would we say, 5-10 years. Mm. I mean, these changes have been happening for longer than that. But I think that the dramatic change has probably happened in the last 5 or 10 years. And I just feel very sad. Mm. I feel very sad to see that change and to feel almost like I don't want to live here anymore and think of where else would I live, which I'd never thought I would feel. So, yeah, I do feel that there needs to be somebody speaking up about what some of us are experiencing, that we're some of, I would say, I think a lot of us are kind of grieving for a city that, as you say, has been lost. And yeah, I feel like we need to make our voices heard.
And what, when you say how, you know, what has been lost or the changes, you know, if you had to say, like, give us 3 or 4 points, what would you say the most important ones?
It's a combination of things. I think London's took an absolute battering in all sorts of ways. I think COVID, the pandemic, I don't think London's fully recovered from that in terms of its nightlife, in terms of its energy, in terms of its buzz. I think mass immigration has dramatically changed London. London's more affected by mass, arguably more affected by mass immigration than any other city in England, really. And we've seen so much change culturally because of that. I think it goes hand in hand with crime, you know, so London feels far less safe to me than it ever has. So I've been working as a nurse in London for 10 years now. When I look back at some of the jobs I used to do, the kind of the shift work where I'd get up very early and travel in the dark in winter and travel home at night in the, you know, when it was dark, and some of the places I traveled through, there's absolutely no way I'd do that now. Really? I just think, I can't believe I did that, you know, but I felt safer then, I guess. That was the issue. And it feels, to me, London just feels so hostile. It feels public transport's very unpleasant now. And I just think it's, there's just so many things, you know, there's so many restrictions on freedom as well. It's, you know, the train strikes, ULEZ, LTNs, everything. You just think, gosh, this is so difficult now. And London always felt to me the place of opportunity and hope and kind of freedom and excitement. And now it just feels like, you know, you're just seeing all the problems everywhere. And I've lost that feeling of, excitement, I guess, about London.
I mean, do you use London a lot? Or do you tend to stick to where you are, say, like in Orpington?
I use London less now. My work is now closer to where I live, so I'm not travelling into central London so much. I'm more careful with the areas I travel through. I still love London. There's still wonderful parts of it. But you do feel, even when you're in the wonderful, you know, being here in Westminster, it's, you know, you still feel inspired by walking past Parliament and seeing the National Gallery. I still feel inspired by those places. But you do, it always comes with a sense of, but we're losing this. We're losing something great here. And I think, you know, particularly in the last 6 months or so, with, you know, just protests after protests after protests, and all of this, you know, divisive rhetoric and extremism, it's not, you know, it just doesn't feel like how it used to. That's how I feel.
I mean, obviously you have to put your policies forward, don't you? I mean, we're talking about May the 2nd, by the way, aren't we? The actual election, and on May the 2nd you've got the mayoralty and the London Assembly elections. When it comes to, you say, you talk about feeling unsafe, right? So, and this massive knife crime we have now. This current mayor has been an abject failure on it. What would you do? What are you putting forward to somehow deal with that?
So within policing, I mean, what's been most concerning, I think, more recently is the two-tier policing that we've been seeing, that the police aren't neutral anymore. I think a lot of us feel that police are completely captured. We see them, you know, celebrating and getting involved with some protests and being very heavy-handed with other protests. I think it's twofold. It makes them look unfair, but it also makes them look unprofessional, and people just don't trust them. So we want to defund all the diversity inclusion industry from the mayor and from public transport. Get rid of it. It's so much money goes on it, and Sadiq Khan, he's spending millions on this stuff. You know, we saw recently all the changing of the names of the the train lines cost 6 million, just to call it the suffragette line. That, you know, that stuff I think is really winding people up. But within the police, we're seeing lots of money being spent on the sending off the police to kind of diversity training and all of this sort of stuff. So we'd want to just cut that, save money, but we'd also want to implement a kind of return to neutrality within the police. And then alongside that, we want to try out some kind of zero tolerance approaches to policing. I mean, as you say, knife crimes, it's just appalling at the moment. We want to get political correctness out of the police. So we would like to, well, I'd like to see stop and search powers increased. I'd like the police to be able to act on operational evidence without fear of, you know, political correctness. Something that we spoke about on Newspeak, but we'd like the police to look into the causes of crime and who's committing crime without, and to be able to look at the types of crime that have been committed by what sort of groups of people, so their nationality, who's committing crime where, and have a full and frank, you know, discussion about that, rather than, as we know, those statistics are often even not obtained, but if they are, they're buried because they're not politically correct. So we'd like to do that as well. But we'd like to go into the most disadvantaged areas and attempt a kind of what's often called a broken windows approach. So the idea of really cracking down on all crime, so even small crime, you know, graffiti and so on, to really try and see if that will help the most disadvantaged areas of London. So, yeah, that's what we would do for policing.
That is, with the broken windows approach, as you explained, this was something pioneered, I suppose, by Giuliani in New York, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And the idea was that, and I think it's borne out by what happened in New York, is that, you know, if there's a broken window, people are more likely to break more, they're more likely to steal from the building. All of these, it's like the small things. Yeah. It's like, look after the pennies and the pounds will take care of themselves, sort of thing, isn't it? But obviously New York has now slid right back and is very violent again. But for a long time, in the 90s, it was so safe. And in fact, people used to complain that it had lost its sparkle. But I think the problem is, I mean, do you think that the mayor should even have control over the police? You know, he is the London commissioner, isn't he, effectively?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, something we thought about when we were thinking about the campaign is, do we even need, well, something we played with was, do we even need a mayor, or should one of our policies be to have a referendum on whether we should have a mayor of London and what powers he should have? Because he or she has such a large, such a large budget. And, you know, this is a time where we're in a sort of cost of living crisis and people can't afford to buy housing. So we just toyed with, could we find a way of just giving as much money back to the people and having the mayor just have less power? So I do think there's an argument for that. But then I would also say we're at a time where people feel that there's a complete lack of authority, there's a complete lack of leadership. And that actually could be where a really positive mayor could be very useful. So I think, yeah, I wouldn't want to have for the mayor to have so much power. But I do think there can be a role for the mayor within the police and within transport, you know, to offer kind of guidance and to bring people together, which Sadiq Khan is not doing.
Do you think, I mean, look, you don't have to, of course, you'd like to win. Excuse me, you'd like to win. If he wins, will be a third term. What's your sense on the ground?
I think there's more people dislike Khan this year round than ever before. I think ULEZ is the big thing,
right,
that a lot of people who may have voted Khan really do not like ULEZ. Unfortunately, you know, within this mayoral contest, the right is quite split, whereas the left isn't. There's not much, and it's a first past the post. It's a, you know, one choice on the voting. Yes,
it's,
so you just pick one. So he is kind of the left. So I don't know how it will affect things. But I think a lot of people are sick of Sadiq Khan. And, you know, people have pointed out to me recently, a lot of his advertisement, a lot of his campaign at the moment is what he's going to do. He's not talking about what he's done, because he has on so many things, on housing, on crime, he's failed. His only claim is that he's green and he's, you know, helped with pollution, which actually arguably he hasn't, because there's a lot of evidence to show that ULEZ hasn't really done that. So I think it's a case of people really feeling like they've been let down by Sadiq Khan. And he doesn't seem to, I don't think he, I when I see him in interviews, I don't even think he believes what he's saying half the time. He seems a bit flat, actually. I think it's coming through in his campaign a bit. But, you know, obviously London is very woke and left-leaning. So I think still people will vote, a lot of people will still vote for him, unfortunately.
Yes. I've always thought that there was sort of no chance that he wouldn't win, simply for that reason, that there's been a massive demographic change. People voted on cultural lines, and the kind of middle class, professional, whatever, lefties would also vote for him sort of on principle, regardless of what's happening with knife crime.
I know.
You know, in a way. But he said recently, Khan, he did one of his flash videos, it doesn't matter where you're from, everyone is a Londoner. I mean, do you agree with that?
No, it doesn't even make sense. Well, everyone in the world is a Londoner. I mean, I think, we have a mayor who's absolutely will not confront the impact of mass immigration on London. We hear diversity is our strength so often. You know, he tweets it, he puts posters up of it. And we all know it's a lie. And you know, it's maddening just to have someone in a position of leadership essentially saying something that you think, well, that just doesn't cut it. That doesn't make sense. That's not what we're experiencing on the ground. On the ground, we're seeing that there's so many different cultures that don't have, you know, British values, that are often misogynistic, that are often very violent, that are often committing lots of crime. And, you know, when does he ever speak out about the effect that mass immigration has had on London? You know, I think we need a mayor that will say, you know, London is full, that will say to Westminster, look, London cannot take any more. We've got about 10 million people now in London. It's affecting housing, it's affecting, you know, the economy so much, and crime, as I said, and he won't even acknowledge it. And I think so many people would just, even if he didn't bring any policies, even if he just acknowledged it, people would feel kind of a relief. Oh, yeah, that's being acknowledged. Because, of course, the mayor can't have that much impact on mass immigration, but he can advocate for London and say, look, we are being affected by this, and this, and this is how we're being affected by it.
I think that's a very good point. I mean, excuse me, when I was standing myself in your position, 8 years ago, everyone kept saying to me, yes, but the mayor doesn't have power over immigration. You know, and you said, but that's not the point. The point is, you say, see, he can advocate for London. He can basically say, we can't, you know, these are the problems. Mm. So look, you know, you've got to bear that in mind. But I think actually, I mean, in my whole time there of 5 years on the Assembly, when housing came up, when all of these came up, immigration was verbatim. No one ever spoke about it. You'd have these phantom conversations. And if you did bring it up, you were immediately a troublemaker or a bigot or whatever. It just wasn't even brought up. I mean, it's one of the wokest places I think I've ever, you know.
It's extraordinary. But I do feel, I may be wrong, but I feel like that's changing a little bit, because you're even seeing immigrants saying there's too much immigration. You're seeing people who are Muslim or people who are, you know, Asian or African who've come here, first generation immigrants, who are saying this is crazy. You know, we've come here because we want a good life. But if you're going to keep allowing more and more people in, then none of us will benefit from it. Mm. So I don't know. I feel like the conversation around immigration, I might be wrong, but is slightly changing a bit, in that you're seeing people who are more on the centre talking about it, maybe centre left. Yeah. But I think it's so needed. You know, as you say, it needs somebody to just talk about it and normalise talking about it within London, because, you know, all the rest of the country, you know it's a big issue, and that's what Brexit was about.
Exactly. Well, and also another thing is, well, you must know, in London, which is now the kind of Remainer city, 40% of people did vote for Brexit.
Exactly.
You know?
Yes.
So you wouldn't have any fireworks with the EU colours in it.
No.
People go on to sort of about our set here. They say these are the EU colours. You know, I remember this during Brexit, I'm saying that too. But on this point, actually, of the politics of London, I know this is very broad, but the SDP, you can characterise it by saying it's to the left more on economics, to the right more on cultural issues,
yes,
right? Yeah. But how do you think that plays out in London, or will it play out in London?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the SDP have one of the strongest policies on mass immigration. They're stronger than Reform. They want to put a complete pause on mass immigration for 5 years. And they're very anti-diversity, equity, inclusion, you're woke. I think I mean, I don't know that enough people know about the SDP yet. I think we're still in the early phases of people knowing. But I think it could potentially, it could potentially speak to that that Brexit 40% actually that probably wouldn't vote for maybe a Thatcherite kind of economics, but they would be interested in something like the SDP that would feel more palatable to them. So yes.
I would have thought actually that for many people watching, for our viewers as well, it would be quite attractive, the SDP, to them, because or actually as well, this famous red wall that, you know, has become such you know, it's not, people not up there are not sort of screaming out for free marketeer, you know, economics. They are, I would say, to the left economically, to the right. That would be a pretty good sort of place for the SDP, isn't it? As well?
Yeah, so we have, so the SDP have some councillors in Leeds, and we are focusing on the red wall because, as you say, you know, when they voted for Boris, it was, there was a kind of idea that they were holding their nose a little bit, and, you know, Boris wasn't one of them, but, you know, they were so pro-Brexit. I think, you know, there's a lot of evidence, I mean, Matt Goodwin's talked about this, but the policies of the SDP really do suit the red wall, you know, the idea that left-wing but culturally conservative, left-wing economically but culturally conservative, with a strong stance on immigration would appeal to a lot of people. It's just, it's just getting it out there, you know.
Yeah. And how about the media? How have they kind of, how have they welcomed you or not, you know, our friends in the media?
Yeah, not too bad. As I was saying before we started the interview, I went to the BBC last week and did a little interview with there. I felt a bit strange being in the BBC, but they were fine with me. They were okay. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people, I'm surprised by how many people do know about the SDP. And there's lots of people in various media outlets that are backing us, whether openly or secret, you know, or secretly, that do like us. So generally people see us, when people do know about us, and that's the point, when they do know, we seem to be striking a chord with people, but it's just, you know, we're such a small party at the moment, so that's the thing.
Well, I mean, a lot of people might not know the background of the SDP. Mm-hmm. I think maybe more of our viewers were, because they're more politically interested, but, you know, it's never gone away, actually, the SDP. It's been bubbling away there, and it's sort of come back.
Yeah, it took a bit of a dip for a long time, and then William Cleuston, who you've had on the show, sort of took it over and has revitalised it. But, of course, it started, no, I think it's in the 80s with David Owen and the Gang of Four. I had was very fortunate enough to meet David Owen, the former Foreign Secretary and Health Secretary, who's very interested in what we're doing. Very, very knowledgeable about politics. It was, you know, wonderful to meet him, and very supportive of what we're doing. So there are people, when I've been knocking on doors and speaking to people, you do get sort of people over the age of 40 sort of do remember the SDP, and they talk about it quite fondly. They say, well, yeah, they were quite big at one point, and I remember, you know, I remember Shirley Williams and David Owen. So there is still
and winning by-elections.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
In fact, at one point, they were, you know, if you look at smaller parties now, people say, oh God, you know, they're on 15%. With the SDP, I think for a while it was on some crazy amount.
Yes, yeah, they did very well.
Yeah. 30-40%.
Yeah. And then, of course, they went off and formed the Liberal Democrats, and that sort of took over, and then the SDP kind of dipped a bit. But, yeah, no, still, there is still, people still do remember them.
You mentioned a few minutes ago about London basically not having really gotten over the pandemic. Yeah. I would agree with you on that. It just feels like a, not exactly a shadow of its former self, but something has changed. I wonder, also, in London, you've got this case of people working from home in a way that simply is not the case in the rest of the country.
Yeah.
I mean, what is your view on that? Do you think people should almost be forced to come back to work? You know?
I think so, possibly. I mean, particularly London, where being in the public square feels so important. It's our capital city. It feels very important. I know it feels like now Fridays feel pretty dead, because I know that often people have work from home on Fridays now, and you do just feel like the energy and the buzz isn't there anymore, and that does feel like we've really lost something. So yes, I would be encouraging people to be coming, and of course if they're coming in, they're using they're using shops and restaurants more and getting the economy going, which is what it really needs, because it all feeds into one thing to the next. And of course, if there's not more people out, you feel safer. I mean, that's something I noticed during the pandemic and subsequently, that when I was traveling at certain times, there was less people around. And that is a kind of a policing of itself, you know.
Yeah.
And now you don't have that. And the more you don't have that, the more people won't go out. So it's like a vicious circle. So you think, well, I won't go out because there won't be many people around. And then it just becomes dead.
Yes, one felt sort of very exposed during the pandemic. You know, I remember people saying at the time in London, anyway, because I was in London, suddenly you saw all the homeless people, and you also saw people who were generally mentally ill out and about far more, because usually they were just by the side, and then suddenly they were exposed walking around the parks or whatever. Is this the beginning of a wider political career, do you think?
I don't know. It's very I'm finding the whole thing very strange. It's very interesting. I'm learning a lot, and I just don't know. I've definitely, will stay with the SDP, I think. I've never been part of a political party before. And it's the first time I felt something like, it approximates my views more or less. So we'll see. And it depends on, it depends on the general election and how things go. And I think there's going to be huge political shifts, I think, in the next 5 to 10 years. We'll probably have a Labour government. I think people will become more and more disillusioned with Labour and Tory, and how that will play for the smaller parties, it's difficult to know, but it might well have an impact. So we'll see. But at the moment, it is nice doing something that feels positive, and meeting lots of people who are like-minded. You often see as well with the smaller parties, the people that go into it aren't so careerist in the way as they're not looking for a short way to become an MP as soon as possible. Of course, if you wanted that, you'd go for the main political parties. Yeah. I've met so many kind of talented and successful, interesting people in the SDP who really do care about politics. And you sort of think, gosh, well, you could be an MP, but because they have integrity, and they want to be with a party that really does express what they feel, they're with the smaller parties. So, who knows?
I think that is a real test, actually. I mean, I remember with UKIP, same thing, that there was no reason to be in UKIP if you wanted professional advancement or social advancement or any of this stuff up the greasy pole or any of that stuff. And it was down, therefore, to the strength of your conviction, which puts forward, therefore, a lot of very, very good people, also some bad people, but I mean, on the whole, I think more interesting, more thoughtful people, actually, on the whole, I would say. Now, look, if people want to help you on the stump, I think, we've got 3 weeks left, I think, about three weeks left. What should they do? Where should they, if they want to come out campaigning for you, how do they get in touch?
So you could email us at info@sdp.co.uk, but we've got a London SDP kind of group. So we're on Twitter, and you could look us up and join us. Also, you could check out my manifesto at the SDP website. So just type in SDP manifesto Amy and it should come up. But definitely, or just contact me or the team directly.
For example, where can people find you on Twitter?
So I'm at Stand Up To Woke.
Stand Up To Woke, isn't it? Yeah.
So we also have, and that's what we're calling our kind of campaign.
Right.
But we also have, there's SDP London on Twitter and the SDP main site on Twitter. So you could get in contact with us there. I mean, join, become a member. And if you become a member, you'll get regular invites to our, we have regular meetups in London. So you could come to that.
Right.
We're going to be setting up some stalls and doing some leafleting pretty soon. So if you join and you want to help out, then just let us know.
And also, are you in this booklet that they do?
Yes,
the mail?
Yes.
This is a thing. It's really quite important because it goes to every household, doesn't
I know.
It? This is the mayoral booklets.
Yeah, yeah.
So has that gone out yet? Or?
It's gone out. Yeah, it has gone out. I haven't physically seen it yet, but I have been sent photos of it to see that it's gone out. It's very strange to think that my photo's in 4 million homes. I guess people will find out about us there as well.
Okay, well, look, Obviously, you know, wish you all the very, very best, Naomi. And we've just got a couple of questions for our members, special members, to ask you. But in the meantime, thanks very much for joining us, and the very best for May the 2nd.
Thank you, Peter.
And see you on Newspeak.
Yeah.
That's it for the show this week. Do have a good week, won't you? And we'll see you next time. Thank you. Bye. Hello. If you're enjoying the New Culture Forum channel and you believe in our mission, may I invite you to join our membership scheme at the link below or on our website, newcultureforum.org.uk. Our work is more important now than ever, and we have great plans ahead for the future, but we can't do it without your support. From as little as £3 per month, you can help ensure that we continue on our mission. As a member, you'll receive a range of benefits, including access to exclusive content, invitations to our private events, including here at our studios, free copies of our books, and much, much more, including, of course, our famous NCF mug. If you aren't able to become a member, then please help us by clicking this button and subscribing to our channel. It's completely free. Just remember to also click the bell icon so that you can get notifications when we post new videos. Thank you.